Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Mission Shunya podcast. Well, actually it's episode number 25, so it's a special one. So big thank you for following and listening to every episode of the podcast. And if this happens to be the first time you're tuning in, thanks for giving it a try. If you liked it, please check the archives and also subscribe to the podcast. The podcast is available on all major platforms for Apple and Android devices. A new episode is released every fortnight. With that brief, let's get to the feature segment with a special guest for this week. As I mentioned the last time around, since this is episode 25, I wanted to bring to you an interesting journey and a story. Well, I have mentioned in the podcast a few times that I've been really fortunate to meet amazing people in my life from time to time. Some of the connections that I've made have stuck around for years now, turning into a good relationship over time. It's one such relationship that I'm tapping into for this week's episode. Today's guest is a global expert when it comes to energy storage and policies related to it. A renowned speaker at major global events and as a professional has had significant contributions to the energy sector in the US and in India. So who's my guest for today?
Hello, I'm Dr. Rahul Walawalkar.
Dr. Rahul Walawalkar is an industry veteran, if I could use that phrase. He has been at the forefront of the energy technology transition and has a particular affinity towards energy storage. He's regularly seen speaking at various forums globally, emphasizing the need for energy storage and other emerging technologies. Rightly so, he began the Emerging Technologies Practice for Customized Energy Solutions, a company with the global headquarters in Philadelphia, US. He now leads the Indian operations for CES and is also the founder and president of the India Energy Storage Alliance. He has also held senior leadership positions at the Global Energy Storage Alliance and other industry bodies. For someone whose name is synonymous with energy, how did it all begin?
I would say I give credit to my mentor and former neighbor, Mr. Madhusudan Murthy. I grew up admiring him. He was a electrical engineer from College of Engineering, Pune, and ran his own company, Power Engineers. So throughout, actually, during my school days, I used to do various school science projects with him, doing like a small wind turbine using cycle dynamo or others, and also seeing him professionally, how he was working. He was one of my role models. So I grew up thinking that, okay, I wanted to become a electrical engineer. And I did my engineering from Walchand College of Engineering and then got into IT. But because of the influence of Mr. Murthy, I always wanted to be more on the energy side. So even within Tata Infotech, although I joined as a Y2K programmer, soon I ended up starting a group looking after energy management, and later on was actually made in charge of All India for looking after energy management initiatives for Tata Infotech. And since I was in an IT company, I was able to marry some of the initiatives we were doing on energy management with also developing some software solutions around it. So developed Ecolumen, which was the first energy efficient lighting design software from India back in 2000-2001. And then I decided to get myself a little bit more educated, because while I was working at Tata Infotech and developing software, most of it was done through sort of self-learning. But I felt that to continue working on this and to be really seen as an expert, I wanted to upgrade myself. So I went to US, did my master's in energy management from New York Institute of Technology, and then ended up joining Customized Energy Solutions in 2004, and simultaneously did my PhD in Engineering and Public Policy at Carnegie Mellon University, where I could actually get more involved in not just the technical aspects, but also related to the policies and business aspects. And since then, I have last 16 years, I've been with Customized Energy Solutions, working on various emerging technologies and integrating them with electricity markets around the globe.
That is a fascinating journey, Rahul. I'm sure after your PhD is when I think the checkered career began in energy in a big way. So how do you go on describing your work in the US? I believe that set your path of where you wanted to be. I mean, the emerging technologies that you mentioned, I think your PhD program was a big step in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. I give a lot of credit to both my work at Customized Energy Solutions as well as learnings I got at Carnegie Mellon University to where I am right now. I sort of went into PhD thinking that I already actually knew a lot about energy industry, and I just wanted to get a PhD so that other people, I can get an entry into like this policy think tank area where usually unless you have a PhD, sometimes you don't get an entry. But being part of the EPP program and learning from likes of Dr. Jay Apt, who was my principal advisor, and he's still the executive director of Carnegie Mellon Electricity Industry Center, or Granger Morgan, who was a head of the department, or Lester Lay, who was one of the most prominent economists, energy economists in US at that time, as well as Dr. Rahul Tongia, who is now currently fellow at Brookings. It has been a complete eye-opener. And especially the way the engineering and public policy program is designed, we get students from across various focus areas, where at the same time, like there are around 15 students each year. Some are working on healthcare, some are working on education, some working on energy, some working on homeland security issues or cybersecurity issues. So the entire program is designed in a way where all the students get appreciation of not just the technical issues related to what their primary focus of learning is, but also start appreciating some of the nuances which policymakers have to go. Because it's always easy to sit outside and criticize policymakers, but the job of policymakers is really challenging, where they have to do consider a lot of trade-offs. So going through the program and working with all the faculty members as well as a diverse group of students, it completely changed my outlook on how I was looking at. When I did my engineering, my focus was, engineers know exactly how to make things and engineers have the solution. When I was working in Tata Infotech, I started getting appreciation about sort of the management and role of business and how a particular company can take some engineering solutions to commercialization and product. And during my stay in US, actually, I started getting appreciation of how businesses and governments can work together to actually make some changes, and also realize sort of limitation both on the business side as well as on the government side, where you see a lot of times some big announcements or big plans, but there is a significant difference between plans and what happens on the ground. So the interdisciplinary program at CMU was a perfect platform where I could actually do a deep dive into a number of these issues, which sometimes when you are just working, you cannot get into. And plus, by being part of the Customized Energy Solutions while I was doing my PhD, I was able to pick up some real-life challenges and problems and focus my research around that. So during my PhD program, I focused on economics of both energy storage as well as demand response technologies in electricity markets. So unlike most of the times when students go for PhD, they get a recommendation that, just focus on where you have a funding. After you do PhD, most likely no one will ask you about your thesis. But I think I'm lucky enough where now after almost 12 years of completing my PhD, I still keep on getting inquiries about it. And as my advisor used to joke that I can stop downloading my thesis now that it has become one of the most downloaded PhD thesis from the CMU website.
That was really fascinating, I must admit. I also chanced upon to see your thesis while I was doing my master's research. And for all listeners, I have to tell them that for anyone looking on demand response or the markets in general in US, Rahul Walawalkar's thesis pops up right in the front on the search page. So that is really popular, and I think it's cited most. And that's a wonderful work that you've done. So
Yeah, the only caveat I would say is that I think, it was quite relevant at that time, but there are so many things which have changed, both on the technology side. For example, when I was working on my thesis, lithium-ion batteries were not even considered as a serious contender for grid applications. Similarly, in terms of the market rules and structures, actually some of the work which I did in my PhD ended up influencing policies at Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, both on demand response incentives as well as creation of ancillary markets and opening ancillary markets for technologies like energy storage. So when I was actually working on my thesis, unfortunately, those markets did not exist. So a lot of things have changed since then. So again, I don't mind people still looking at it, but I always caution people that a lot had changed both in the technological world as well as on the policy and market side. Just pay attention to that as well. Just out of curiosity, feel free to download it. But a lot of things have changed in the world since then.
Exactly. Talking in particularly of the change that has happened ever since you wrote the paper, Rahul, from the technology perspective, like how would you say what has been the major change in the technology front as the clean tech transition has happened over the decade and a half since you finished PhD thesis? How would you sum it up for anyone who's listening, common person who's listening to this? How would you sum it up for such a person?
Sure. So I think last 15 years has been actually a sort of a dream come true in terms of seeing some of the transitions. If you just sort of a roll back and look at like 2002-2003 timeline, there was a time when actually in US, most of the generation was still fossil fuel based and coal being a dominant. And few years before that, people were starting to invest very heavily in natural gas. But then natural gas prices went from $2 per MMBTU to almost $10 per MMBTU. And we had a lot of stranded assets with natural gas turbines, which were installed, but were not getting dispatched in the market. And that time, solar and other renewables were seen as something which is just for sort of a aspirational targets from the environment point, but not having even like a few percentage in terms of the annual energy output at the national level. So mainly the focus was a lot on conventional resources and then just looking at dynamics between those. But then around 2008 to policy started shifting where the electricity markets led by FERC particularly started allowing range of different technologies, non-generation technologies to start participating in wholesale electricity markets. And that generated emergence of technologies like sodium sulfur batteries, lithium ion batteries, flywheels, which started getting integrated with the electric grid. And some of the early projects which were commissioned actually integrated both these technologies with conventional resources like thermal plants, but also in some cases started integrating them with renewables and started showing how actually storage can help a grid operate more efficiently. And once some of these initial projects were installed, actually policymakers also started to realize, and that was a time when we started seeing a very rapid decline in solar prices. And some of the things which most of the people felt were just aspirational, but within last 10 years, people have seen as the scaling up of these technologies and projects have happened, it is not just about the cost reduction at the manufacturing level, but how the entire project cost, how the optimization of the project, how the improvement of the design, improvement of the operations of the project has actually brought the levelized cost down. And that is, I think, a classic learning, which I hope will stay there with the industry for at least next 20, 30 years. Because right now, again, there are a number of these new technologies which are getting integrated and perhaps at a similar stage where solar was back in 2004, 2006. But having seen within last 10 years the kind of success which solar has had, I think that gives a lot of good confidence to people. At the same time, in last decade, there have been a lot of failed investments in this sector. So I hope people can also sort of learn from that and be humble that some of the things, again, no one can predict it accurately. So we have to provide more sort of a technology agnostic policies and encourage competition and let market decide which is a technology winner.
Well, we couldn't have had a better summary of the clean tech transition over the last couple of decades from a global perspective.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Rahul summed up every major aspect of the space, ranging from the emergence of market-based procurement of energy in the US to the declining price of solar and wind power projects to the rise and fall of companies and failed investments during the same time. Taking cue from his last line, that is, let the markets decide the right technology solution. What is his impression from interaction with policymakers who shape the markets? Has it drastically changed in the last decade or so?
So I would say maybe I'll separate out maybe some of the developed countries versus developing countries in this regard. And again, in both cases, I would say there is a noticeable difference as compared to 10 years back. And now it's just that maybe where they are in terms of the maturity level is still different. Maybe it is also dominated by the local political or socioeconomic pressures which the policymakers have. So again, I don't blame them for that. But if I see places like US or Europe, I see a lot more clarity in terms of the policymakers, particularly in some regions, like you take example of California or New York or others, where they have realized that this technology transition is coming and they are looking at it into more holistically. In India, 10 years back, perhaps there was a complete denial, or people basically just believed that since it will take like 10 years for these technologies to get commercialized in US or Europe, India should wait another 10 years. So basically, when we started India Energy Storage Alliance back in 2012-13, majority of the people almost laughed at us, saying that why are you looking at focusing on these emerging technologies in India? It is going to be 2030 before India will start adopting these technologies. Whereas we believe that India needs to leapfrog by adopting these technologies at the same time as they get commercialized in US and Europe, because we also saw this time a window of opportunity where India can actually start focusing on R&D and manufacturing while these technologies are getting commercialized, rather than being just a late adopter and importing these technologies. So we see in India right now, there is some policymakers have very well understood some of these nuances and understand this opportunity, particularly, I would say, folks at Niti Aayog led by Mr. Amitabh Kant is a classic example. Former MNRE secretary, Dr. Satish Agnihotri was again a classic example. And perhaps, I think, at a PMO level, directly at a prime minister level, I think he's someone who really understands this and is focused on it. Unfortunately, with the majority of the bureaucracy, I think there is still a tendency where there is a paralysis by just doing endless analysis. And there is also, I think, a lot of vested interest groups who are interested in just keep on bringing up new topics for discussion and try to delay some of the impending decisions. So in India, we are still having this fight where at a high level, yes, directly from the Prime Minister or the CEO of the Niti Aayog or some of the ministries, there is a very clear understanding. There is a focus on launching manufacturing policy along with increasing deployment. But on ground, we still need to have a better support. And some of the things probably, I think, industry will just have to take a lead on it. I think we cannot just wait for policymakers, because they are still waiting for some other triggers or just waiting for prices to come down further. Although in last 10 years, already we have witnessed for some of the technologies almost like 90% price reduction. So that is amazing. And there are already a few gigawatt hour worth of opportunities which are already economical right now in India. So what we are trying to do it is now, while we continue to support policymakers and help educate them, we are not counting on just policymakers leading the way like it has happened in California or other places. We think in India, industry needs to also step up and start deploying these technologies where it is already economical and start scaling up on their own.
Industry is taking a lead is a perfect example. You have mentioned this at multiple forums and you've been advocating this for the last few years. So industry is taking a lead is one thing. Now shifting gears, if you were to look on the other side, I'm sure over the years, over the decades, you would have interacted with common consumers as well. I'm sure we definitely working in the space, we definitely have like a lot of queries when someone asks you about some technology. There are myths and there are misconceptions about the technology and how this happens. So how has that journey been interacting with common consumers who hear something like a solar or electric vehicle for the first time?
Sure. So I think both sides, I see there is a lot of curiosity right now. And also, I think with some of the successes, both on the solar side as well as on the EV side, with the classic example being Tesla, I think there is a lot more awareness that these technologies are very close to commercialization. In India right now, one challenge most of the consumers have is that the right products are not very easily available, or sometimes the financing associated with them is not available. So what we are looking at focusing on is not just focusing on the technology and just hoping that there will be some technology breakthrough which will suddenly make a product reach a wider acceptance. We have to work on the rest of the ecosystem as well. Take a classic example of smartphones, right? Just maybe 5 years back or 10 years back, there were very few believers who felt that a country like India can have a larger adoption of smartphones. Even just 3 or 4 years back, classic example of the former country head for Vodafone said that, oh, India doesn't need 4G data speeds, even with the current 2G or 3G speeds are not being utilized. So we don't need to invest in India. And suddenly we have seen with last 2-3 years as the smartphone prices, there were new smartphones being started getting introduced at price points below 20,000 rupees as compared to the original smartphones like Apple or Samsung, which were priced at 40,000 or above. Suddenly the market started expanding, and with entry of Reliance Jio, where the data prices started coming up, now India has within last 2 years suddenly become one of the largest consumers of data. So these are the type of changes I think will happen, and Indian consumers are very smart. In India right now, for EVs or on the stationary energy storage, we think we need little bit more availability of some of the better products in the market. And also we need a little bit innovation around the financing and associated business models, because for number of customers in India, typically just buying out a higher priced item is a little bit challenging. At the same time, there are a range of customers, and we have seen the biggest adoption of this is in terms of e-rickshaws in India, where India already has more than a million e-rickshaws operating. And this was not pushed by any government agency or any particular even manufacturer. This is just something where consumers felt it was economical, and there were products which were made available to them, and the market had just taken off. So those type of things, I'm very confident that in India, customers are very smart, and as soon as those products and associated financing is made available, we are going to see a big uptake in adoption.
That is very interesting, and I hope that turns true. But talking in general of any consumer, people in general in across the world, I think there is still a myth that, say, living a sustainable lifestyle is a costly proposition. How would you debunk that?
So this is a part where a lot of time the challenge happens because people just compare it basically apples and oranges, where they would just take same size. For example, just take an example of, say, LED light or earlier CFL light versus incandescent. If you just say that, okay, on a per kilowatt basis, what is the cost? Then yes, indeed, some of these technologies may be more costly. But if you think of it, okay, how much light I need, and then see that, okay, as compared to incandescent bulb, LED light is maybe 20 or 30 times more efficient. So actually, I need a much smaller amount of light. And then also considering that lighting has almost 70 or 80% of the lifetime cost in terms of the electricity consumed by the light as compared to just the upfront cost. Suddenly you see the economics changing, right? And that's where India ended up being one of the biggest adopters of LED lights. So same things happens with other technologies, where if you just start comparing say a conventional IC engine car and say that, okay, I want the same performance with the electric vehicle, then yes, the electric vehicle upfront cost is definitely higher. But if you start considering that, okay, there are users who are driving 150, 200 kilometers per day, and they are actually spending 70% of the life cycle cost in terms of the operating cost, or same happens with anyone who is operating diesel generators for more than 500 hours in a year. So there they can actually start deploying even a higher cost technologies and actually save money year on year. I would say that some apprehension about the higher cost is not unjustified. At the same time, the amount of fear which is there, or the amount of just decision delays which happen, where people just assume that we have to wait for cost reduction without realizing that they're actually losing more money while waiting for the price reduction, is something which is a little bit unfortunate. And that's a part where we need better consumer education. I think collectively we need to continue working on that.
That's perfectly well put. And it perfectly leads me to the next topic of discussion, next point, what I want to discuss with you. The examples that you gave clearly illustrate that you've been in the space for quite some time, and you've really tried to communicate to people the benefits of going green, living a sustainable lifestyle. Many stories kind of illustrate that. So how has this been? Like, I think you've done in multiple mediums. You have written about it. You've spoken it at various events. And for the last few years, you've also been on podcasts. So how do you think the uptake of this consumer awareness has happened, and how has it changed? Has it been positive so far?
Yeah. So again, obviously, I think sometimes all of us become very greedy. So I have again a long list of things which I would have liked to be much, much better in position. But again, if I just take an independent view, or if I just look back at some of the notes I had written back in 2010 when I moved back from US to India, I think last 10 years has been amazing progress. I remember just looking at, like, originally when the National Solar Mission was launched with a goal of 20 gigawatts solar by 2022, most of the people, including myself, I'll confess, we felt that, oh, government has this tendency of launching this 5-year targets, and very rarely they exceed even 50% of that. So, okay, so we should be getting 10 gigawatt by 2022. And then suddenly, I think after 2014, we saw the change in the focus, scaling up of the target in 100. And we can still criticize, saying that, oh, maybe we may or may not reach 100 gigawatt in next 2 years. But if we just take a look back and say that, okay, just 5 years back, we would have been happy with reaching 10 gigawatt, and already we have crossed 30 gigawatt. So that way it is, there is a glass is definitely more than half full. We still have scope for improvement, and there are a number of things where I think we have missed certain opportunities, particularly something close to my heart in terms of the energy storage. I think there have been so many projects and RFPs which have been discussed and retendered in last 3-4 years. It is very, very frustrating. At the same time, seeing the recent tender from SECI, where they have received 1200 megawatt RE plus 300 plus megawatt of storage project. That's one of the largest project of such size. And if we can actually now focus on implementing those, then we can really change. There have been on the other side positive stories on the distributed side, where, as I already gave example of e-rickshaws, or you take an example of telecom towers, where there is more than 3 gigawatt hour of advanced energy storage technologies already deployed in India. Sometimes people tend to focus just on these big, large projects and think, oh, India has not yet done many 100 megawatt grid scale projects, while forgetting that India is already become one of the largest market, and there is more than like a 300% growth in imports of lithium ion batteries in India in last couple of years. So that way, I think the market is growing reasonably fast. Now, one of the top priorities for us is to try to make sure that we actually build a supporting manufacturing and R&D ecosystem, and really don't end up in a situation where 5 years down the line, we are again having this discussion, why did we miss the boat, and which next technology we should focus on for manufacturing. So we think we are a couple of years late, but we have a very good opportunity this time, where we can be an integral part of a global supply chain for EV and energy storage. And that's our complete focus right now for next 2 years.
That's wonderful, Rahul. On a final note, I have to ask you this question. I mean, in the last few years, you mentioned about government setting targets for having a certain amount of renewable capacity and so on. But in the last couple of years, we have seen many people, like many cities, many corporations also set targets for like, we will cut emissions by 2030, we will source only clean energy by 2025, or we will ban cars, ban petrol or diesel cars by 2040, and so on. So with all these big targets and announcements coming from governments, multinational corporations, and everyone, so how do you think the decade ahead is going to shape up in this space?
I think some of these announcements may look very ambitious right now. But if you pay sort of a very close attention to how some of the technology changes are happening, I think even without some of these announcements, we will end up being in a much closer to those targets anyway. That's at least my belief. Where I think the governments and some of the policymakers have the opportunity right now is by setting up these targets sooner, they can actually channelize more investments in this within next 2 or 3 years and actually build some, capture some of these low investments in their particular state or their regions, rather than just this technology is getting developed in some other parts and then different regions just being an importer of those technologies. So we see the way the technology improvement, for example, take an example of renewables, right? During the Obama days, when they set a target for solar, that was a very ambitious target. But now, if you see the price of the solar, it is the cheapest energy source for grid. So why not anyone would want to have a higher penetration of solar or higher percentage of solar integrated with the grid, because it is already cheapest. We have never had any arguments discussing, oh, why should we or should we not have of the same resource if it is available at a cheaper price. So that way I see this transition happening. Similarly with EVs, based on all our analysis, we think already customers who are driving more than 100-150 kilometers per day, they can start saving money right now. But beyond 2023-2025, we see a number of electric vehicles will actually start competing on a upfront capex cost with IC engine vehicles, especially with some of the increased emission control the standards which IC engine vehicles have to meet. And that's where we see a lot of hybrid vehicles coming in between now and 2023, which can allow both existing IC engine industry as well as some of the emerging EV industry to coexist. And then beyond 2025, I guess it will be the choice of the customers which will end up driving. So right now, some of these targets look very ambitious. But when we will be in 2030, like if we have another interview in 2030, I'm pretty sure we will be much closer to some of these targets than what people right now believe.
I'm sure I'm definitely hopeful that we will have another interview in 2030. That's Dr. Rahul Walawalkar, enthusiastic and hopeful as always. So Rahul, thanks a lot. Thanks for taking time and sharing your views. It's been an absolute pleasure to work with you and interact with you on a regular basis. So thank you for taking time.
Thank you very much, Girish. As always, it is a pleasure. Let's talk even between now and 2030, and all the best for your efforts with Mission Shunya and effort you are doing. Again, I still remember the day when you started the Emerging Tech Radio podcast for CES. So again, that is still continuing. So again, I'm pretty sure with Mission Shunya, you will be able to reach to much wider audience and continue your good work. Thank you very much for your efforts.
So yes, it has been a pleasure to have known Dr. Rahul Walawalkar and worked and collaborated with him. The energy and enthusiasm would rub off on anyone who interacts with him. He's also very welcoming when someone reaches out to him. So you can connect with Rahul on LinkedIn or Twitter. Just search his name and you'll find him. In fact, that's how I got to know him long time back. And finally, you heard it right. My first podcast launch was in collaboration with Rahul. Emerging Tech Radio has been running for 3 years now. So if you want to listen to in-depth conversations on energy featuring business leaders and policymakers from around the world, you should check the podcast. It's available on all platforms where you find Mission Shunya. And if you enjoy the stories and conversations, please give this podcast a rating and write a review on Apple Podcast or iTunes. It definitely helps in enabling more people find the show. And also, feel free to share the podcast to 3 people every week, friends or colleagues, and it definitely helps in getting more people aligned with our mission of transitioning towards a zero carbon economy. So with that, this is Girish Shokumar, and thanks for listening.
Toyota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.